I'm sorry for the interruption. Go ahead. You were talking about moving to your grandparents?
We moved to grandparents' home, which my father and mother bought. Then, growing up my childhood at that location, going to country school, one-room schoolhouse, all grades were taught in the one-house schoolroom. Going to high school in Monroe City, Missouri, a town of under 2,000. The first 2 years of high school, we had to pay tuition. It wasn't anything as a free education until the junior year, which was very fortunate for myself and other people in the neighborhood because of the Depression years.
Could I just interrupt you for 1 second? When you moved, then you moved from Montana to Missouri, and you stayed there during your growing up years till you graduated from high school?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Did your family live on the farm then?
Yes, they lived on the farm. In fact, my mother still does. She is still living. And we have the general area, although it's been enlarged like all farm communities are now. They've swallowed a lot of smaller farms, for you can't make it on a small farm anymore. After high school, and during high school, we'd work of whatever was available and type of work for farm people at the rate of 10 cents an hour, or 10 hours for a dollar for a day. Most of it was, the work was available to haul gravel to put on the clay roads. Graduated high school at the age of 18 and went down to St. Louis, tried to find something, but that was right in the middle of the Depression, so there wasn't any work for young people. It was hard enough for adults to support their families in that day and time.
Before we go on any further, when you went to high school, did you have to live away to go to high school, or did you drive into town, or how?
High school in that area, you had to rent a room, and you did your own cooking, and you were entirely on your own from the age of 14. There was no buses. Sometimes got home on the weekends, but depended on the weather. Being so many mud roads, it depended on conditions.
So you moved away from home at age 14 and lived in a room?
In a single room, and it was around 10 miles from where our ranch was into town. But I had to, or anybody that lived over 2 or 3 miles within walking distance, you might say, had to move into town and rent a room, and they were on their own.
Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit about what life was like for your family on the farm in Missouri at that time. What do you remember of the time that before you went away to high school?
Well, basically, we were general farming. We had cattle, sheep, hogs, and farming of the crops at that time was wheat, oats, and corn. When I was in grade school, we were milking quite a few head of cattle. We'd have to get up before breakfast, before school, we would milk. Well, I was milking 12 cows It took us about 2 hours to do our chores, and then we would come in and eat breakfast, and then get ready and go to school. And the same repeat in the evening. Summertime, after school was out, we would start school at the 1st of September, and school was out at the 15th of April. So, fairly short term of school, but it was strictly the 3 R's. It was strictly learning and not very much play. No activities whatsoever, other than recess and noon, did you have to do anything on recreation. Summertime was spent in harvesting the crops, putting up hay, thrashing. We had worked on the old tight thrash machine, which had the steam engine and the harvester, that, which was called a separator. You hauled the wheat would be cut and chopped, and then it would be hauled to the machine and thrashed. Depending on the age of what kind of a job that the farm boys would take.
Your grandparents owned this farm, right? And your parents helped them to farm it?
No, my father bought the farm from my grandparents. In fact, my grandmother died. I can hardly remember her. I can remember my grandfather, but they died within a couple of years. He died a couple of years after we came back, and we bought the ranch after he passed away.
What was your family doing in Montana? What kind of work?
Well, they homesteaded 160 acres out there. Green or raw land, and it was dry farming, or which is the Midwest and the Northeast. It's entirely depending upon the weather and the crops he had. I don't remember, but he had cattle and built a barn and the house out on the eastern part of Montana, on the more of the prairie type. And I remember my father talking about the snowstorms, the blizzards. They had to have a wire connected from the house to the barn, and the wind was blowing so hard you had to walk where you were leaning against that wire all the time, for you could be separated from it, and you're in a blizzard, you would never find your way to the barn or back to the house, and it would be fatal.
Mm-hmm. Did time start to get hard in Montana that they decided to move to back to Missouri? Or what?
No, I don't really remember what made them decide to come back to Missouri, unless it was the severe winters or short summers up there. And for my mother's folks were all in Montana. They went all up there together. Why they came back to Missouri, I've never heard them make that statement. They both grew up in that area where they came back to when they were young people, and maybe that is why they wanted to come back. Their memories were better there than what they had found out there on the homestead. They came back, I believe it was about 1921 when they came back, so the hard times hadn't started. Mm-hmm. For it didn't, I would say I was about 11 years old when the real hard times begin, when they begin to turn in that direction of the drought and the stock market failing and the hard times mm-hmm. which developed into the 30s.
When you think back of when the hard times started, what was your life like on the farm? What things were going on? Did you get hit by the drought too, or what, you know, what was that time like?
The area we were located in Missouri is about 20 miles west of the Mississippi River, so we were on the far extreme edge of the Dust Bowl area, you might say. We didn't have the dust, or our soil didn't blow away like it did farther west. We did have the drought. The rains, I believe, stopped in March. Maybe we got a few showers in April. But the corn that summer, that I can remember so vividly, corn was about 3 feet high, and by August, the fields were absolutely bare. It had dried up and blown away, or it had fell over, and the people had put their stock in there to salvage what little they had, for with no rain, the pasture land dried up, or it was just brown hills, you might say. We rented whatever land or pasture or brush or whatever was available for our stock. We had a pretty good herd of cattle at that time, but as it developed, we had to finally sell, and that is where I decided I didn't want to be a farmer. When I sent the one cow that children are given when they're farm boys, mm-hmm. sent it to St. Louis and got $6 for that cow, I decided I didn't want to be a farmer. Some of the neighbors were a little worse. They sent a shipment of hogs to St. Louis, and they got a due bill for the freight bill. They didn't even receive enough to pay for the freight down there even.
You know, that's one of the things that, being that you mentioned it, one of the things that I've read about that contributed to many people losing their farms is that there were extremely high freight rates for shipping grain, cattle, that kind of thing. Do you remember your parents ever mentioning anything about that?
Not other than they say that they didn't, whether the freight rates were high accordingly or out of proportion, that I wouldn't know. For it, whatever you shipped and whatever you got was automatically taken out, and just the comments that, well, I didn't even get enough to pay for the freight, let alone get anything out of my hogs. So still shipping our hogs or letting them develop, grow, to which was around a 200-pound hog when you butchered it. We started in when they were under 100 pounds and just ate them. Mm-hmm. But we, living on a farm, we were never hungry like the city people were, for we had all of our meat, we had all of our vegetables, we had the garden, which we were able to keep going for a while. And had stuff. We were fortunate in that our ranch was well supplied with water. But we had natural springs that we never had to import water, for they run all the time through the drought. So our stock not only in the summertime, but in the winter they had open water, where it was very fortunate.
Yeah, I see that. How far out in the country did you live?
We were about 10 miles from this little town where I went to high school, and 25 miles from Hannibal, Missouri, which is fairly well known because of Mark Twain. But we were strictly country people, and it was hill type farming. You farmed the creek bottoms and let the grass grow on top of the hills where it would wash away or ruin your land if you, when the rains did come.
What do you remember? What kind of social activities were you involved in as a youngster?
Well, mostly the social activity would start there in country schools. We would have what they would call a pie supper, where the women and girls would bring either a pie or a box of candy, and then boys would bid on it. That way they made their school activity money. At church was always a gathering point. The school and the church were the two social points. Incidentally, the church was donated out of our property there, and it is still active, the church is. It is one of the few country churches that is still active today. Individuals, was limited to the neighborhood because of the distance, the lack of transportation, other than actually a horse and buggy is what I grew up with. And, when I went to high school, we got our first car, an old Model T. So, and we would gather in the neighborhood in the Sundays generally, would be maybe play cards. We kids all learned how to swim, skate in the wintertime on the ponds or creeks or whatever, wherever you could find a good frozen, clean, clear ice. Summertime, a little older, the fishing, hunting. Wintertime, it'd be trapping. In fact, that's how I made enough money to go through high school, was trapping fur-bearing animals.
Was it unusual for a youngster to go away to high school like you did?
No, that was the only way in that part of the country.
I mean, if you got a high school education, but were there more kids that stopped going to school as soon as they finished the grammar school, or was it fairly common in the area for the kids to go on to high school?
In the first years after I got out of high school, there was very few of them went on to high school because they had to pay tuition and there just wasn't the money.
Mm-hmm.
At the when I started junior year, Missouri put in a free education, and there was a lot of people that came back that was in their 20s to finish. They may have had 1 year of high school or something like that and dropped out, and they came back and finished in that year. There was segregated schools at that time in, actually the blacks and the Catholic and then the other rest of the denominations in the three schools there in that little town. So when I graduated, we actually had the largest class by picking up all of these older children that wanted to finish up their high school.
Did you live with another young man in a room, or did you live with a family, or how?
No, we would just rent a room in individual private home. For I believe it was my first 2 years, if I remember right. And then we There was kind of an apartment or a bunch of rooms over a commercial building downtown, and my brother, we were together, and in one of the other rooms there was three or four other boys that rented the other room across the hall, so we were...
How much studying did you get done, and how much fooling around did you do with all those youngsters in one place?
That was entirely up to the individual. You were on your own. You had nobody to push you. So if you wanted an education, you stayed with it. Social life, as far as dating, there wasn't any, as far as myself. I never had a date, so I didn't have the money to even... Well, you had 50 cents a week spending money, and mm-hmm. that was for a loaf of bread and whatever else that you might want to indulge on 50 cents. But I played football in the last 2 years of high school. They put in the football. The basketball, I didn't care for that. Track was the activities at school.
Did all of your other brothers and sisters, I think you said you're in a family of seven, did they all go away to high school like you did? Or?
My brother that was next to me, he dropped out in his junior year. The rest of them went through high school. Some of them took business courses or went some 2 years of college. They were... two of my brothers went on to became officers in the Air Force.
Sounds like your family was pretty education oriented.
Well, my mother was the guiding hand there. My dad would have preferred the boys to go on farming and things like that. But my mother sacrificed anything she had to get us through school. High school. Farther on, that was entirely up to the individual. If they could, later on, the parents did have enough money to help them a little bit. But my two brothers that went through junior college actually stayed with my sister in Los Angeles, and she was married and financially well enough that she could take them in and give them a place to go on, and I expect she helped them monetarily go on to college for the 2 years. And
when after you graduated from high school and you went to St. Louis to look for work, were times on the farm getting harder or?
Yes, they that was the drought had been going on for quite some time, and the economy was hitting bottom when Roosevelt came in, and it was hitting rock bottom, I would say, at that point.
Did your parents have any involvement that you remember with Roosevelt's policies on
WPA.
Not necessarily WPA, that too later, but Roosevelt or the soil bank thing where they didn't raise, they left part of it in
the soil bank, and they were paid to not produce crops or cut down on their herds of either hogs or cattle. I remember only that we were in the production of the hogs. I think we only had two or three sows that for breeding purposes, and I think we cut off one. That's kind of faint in there, those, but we didn't go into the land bank, anything like that, for most of it. Our land was in hay, which we had to have for our stock, livestock. Mm-hmm. We were using horses. We didn't have any tractors, so it, we had to have enough hay to carry all of our livestock through the winters.
So what it sounds like is that when times were really bad, in those years, your family was like a self-sufficient unit. They pretty much could raise what they needed, and although they may not have had much actual cash money, that as far as living, they were able to pretty much live the same way that they'd always lived.
Pretty well, if that was the story of it. Actually, when the man that held the mortgage, our mortgage wasn't held by the banks, which had to foreclose on so many of the farms, things like that. It was held by a neighbor, and he was very generous in that extent that he just let things drift, for he said, well, children, they've got to be fed, and what would I do with all this land? But this was true until his son got married, and I didn't know it until years later that when Dad had bought another 50 acres, that he said, well, I want this for my son to farm, and I didn't know it until I was in California for maybe 10 years before I knew that he asked. And my mother didn't even know it, she thought he had just decided to sell it back to him, but it was actually, he wanted to voluntarily repossess it, you might say, or foreclose you on it. I don't know how any of the circumstances or financial arrangements of it, but that was as near as we came. In fact, for years I thought we didn't, but came through it without any loss of it, but that I found out later was a different story. But to meet the financial arrangements like that, we would grow the chickens, and we would take and kill the chicken, turn the cream, make butter, anything like that. We'd take it into Hannibal and sell it house to house. We would, we could make more out of it than selling to the produce houses and letting them process it. In fact, 2 years I made maple syrup. This is quite a process. You take and
wait a second. I'm just about out of tape on this side, so before you tell me about that, let me turn the tape off.
Okay.
Okay.
This is quite a process to make maple syrup. You have to have a special type of a tree. It's the hard maple. And in the spring, in fact, in January, before the snows are even off of the ground, you drill holes into the trees and put in what you call a spiral to drain the water out of the tree into a bucket. Then you have to take this, you have them strung all along the, generally a north slope, which is, the snow stays on it longer, it's more icier, so it's harder work to carry it. And it would tap as many trees as there was available. It takes 50 gallons of water, of maple water, to make a gallon of maple syrup. So I carried all this water from these trees to the where I had the kettles to boil it down in 2 5-gallon buckets. And you had to cut the wood, haul it up there, and keep the fire going, boil all this water down. And that The first year that I tried this, I made 50 gallons of syrup. So there's a few gallons of water you see carried around that side of that hill to get this. I sold that for 50 cents a quart. You can't even buy a little bottle of syrup for that these days. I did that two springs, and I remember one time when we took some of it to Hannibal, we got caught in a storm, snowstorm, coming back, driving up the highway. You couldn't see. Only thing you could see would be the trees on both sides of the highway, so you put your car in the middle of that open space and you drove home. It was just a case of learning how to survive in under most adverse conditions.
About how old were you when you did this?
I was 19 and 20 on the years I made the maple syrup. That is just before I started to California.
Okay, you mentioned earlier that you went to St. Louis to look for work. How did you get enough money to make that trip?
Well, I was never out of work for either. Some of the farmers around there had to have some help. Some had no boys in the family, which is, you know, they were all girls, so would put up hay or thrashing machines of wheat, cultivating corn, just general farm work like that. And then, as I say, I love to hunt and trap varmints in the wintertime, and coon and the mink were good fur-bearing animals, and it was a challenge to be able to outsmart these animals and make them step in a trap.
Mm-hmm.
So it saved enough to go to St. Louis. In fact, had enough to, when we came to California, to last us a year or so.
Oh, sounds like you did okay with your trapping.
It is a challenge to between the different boys in the neighborhood who could develop this sense of for some varmints are extremely intelligent, and a fox, I never could outfox him.
It must be where the thing smart as a fox comes from.
It
or sly as a fox.
It is very true. And there was wolves coming into the neighborhood at that time, and some of the older fellows that was the neighbors that he would specialize in that end of it. And being young, it takes experience to learn how to get into these areas.
What kinds of work did you look for when you went to St. Louis?
Well, you look for almost anything. The only thing that turned out to be available was commission door-to-door selling. And I was too young, had no experience for any other type of job. In fact, went down to a Chevrolet factory one time, and there was people lined up for, I would say, miles, and they were hunting for some older people that had profession or had experience. A young person had no chance at all. So
that would have been like in about 33, 34, something like that?
That would be 34, if I remember right. This would be 34. I stayed down there, I believe, I was gone for 3 months, and I was just using up my cash, so I decided I might as well go back up to where I could pick up farm work, which I knew, and so I tried to get on the Missouri Highway Patrol, but good references, but I was too young for the superintendent of schools at Missouri State Capital Jefferson City was the principal of our high school, and so, but he said, you're a year too young to even be considered, so gave that up.
So what made you decide, or what made you choose California of all of the places that in the United States?
That is a little bit funny. I decided in 1 hour to come to California. My brother, which is a couple of years younger than I, said, I'm going to California. He'd bought an old 28 Buick. And I'd came back from St. Louis and was kind of had a little bit of my wandering out of my system. But Mom said, I want you to go with him. So, okay. That quick, I decided to come to California. My brother had already made up his mind, so that's the way we started for California.
You went in his car that he had bought?
Right. We had an old 28 Buick, and so we started out west on Highway 36. We were going to sleep in the car. We'd fixed some boards which we lay across it and sleep right in the car, but we hadn't got 100 miles from home when it started raining. It was equinox, and the first three nights it was driving through rain, headed toward the Rockies, and we got into Denver. About 4 o'clock in the afternoon, we'd counted on staying there, but we decided, well, there's no use wasting this many more. So we decided to drive on through Denver and hit the mountains, and the storm was coming down off of the mountains that day. First time I ever hit fog, I think about scared us to death. We got up to Idaho Springs. We stopped for the night. Next morning, it was about 4 inches of snow on the ground. We decided that night we'd better check some of our clothes in our suitcases, and we found out they were wet, so we had to dry all of our clothes out that night. Got up the next morning, we headed over Berthoun Pass, and the old car didn't act too good, so set out on the fender going over this pass and kept jiggling the carburetor and the fuel line. This pass is 12,000 feet, so it was kind of a joke to us that we goosed it over the Continental Divide. And then we would, to save gas, we would get down an incline, we would turn the ignition off, throw it in neutral, and let it roll. So we made pretty good mileage off of our mileage.
You decided to stay in motels then?
We had decided to stay in motels, for it was just too wet until we got to out on desert, and that time it was, we paid $1 a night for a motel. But we decided to stay in motels from then on. For sleeping on just a straight board was not quite soft as we'd been used to. Anyway, we headed on across. Coming down, tires were fairly smooth, so we decided, well, we'd go as far as we can. Coming down into Salt Lake City off of the mountains there, we blew our first tire, so we went down into Salt Lake and found a tire shop. Just fortunately, there'd been a wreck of this old car, and it had these used tires there, and we were really fortunate to get two new tires at, I believe it's $10, something like that. We headed out across Great Salt Lake. Decided we'd better fill up gas before we started to cross there, for that's over 100 miles, and we didn't think there'd be any filling stations. We had a pretty The tank was fairly full, but we pulled up to the station. They owed 25 cents a gallon for gas. Oh, that's just too much. We only put in 4 gallons, so someplace had to get us across the desert, so it could be cheaper someplace out there. So we headed on across, and then we was looking at the map and decided we'd like to, it was coming into California, come into Yosemite. So we went to cross on Highway 40 to Wendover, and then we headed towards Ely, Nevada, down across. Some roads that on the maps were shown, so we would take the shortest cut. And we hit one of these that we cut across from what is Highway 395, or I'm not sure that. We hit 2395, but there was a road showing us we could save about 40 miles. We cut across this area there. So we cut across. We got up in there in the mountains. There wasn't any road at all. It was just pine needles in the trail that were, I guess, farmers, ranchers was cutting across. So we came on down into Levining, first day of October. The storm was moving into California that night. So it rained pretty hard there in the mountains, and then I got up the next morning. We never went to a restaurant. We carried crackers, bread, cheese. That's what we ate all the way across. We were 7 days coming across. We started out over Tioga Pass, came down there, and there was a log laying across the road, so it didn't look too big, so what's a log doing across the road? So I got out of the car and threw the log out of the way, started up across, climbing into the pass. The rocks had come down during the night, so we'd stopped, threw the rocks out of the road, and kept working our way across the top, and got up to the ranger station. It says stop, so we stopped. But there wasn't anybody there, so looked around, walked into the ranger station, wasn't anybody there, so we got back in the car, started down, got 100 yards down the road or something, we heard somebody yelling upside the mountain, and hear the ranger coming running. Says, what are you guys doing up here? We're going across to Yosemite. Says, well, the road's closed. I said, well, I guess you'd better go get in business then before we opened it. We threw the rocks out of the road and logs and stuff like that. And we went on down into Yosemite. And this storm had really, it was a pretty heavy storm that night. Before we got up on top, there was construction of the new highway coming down into the valley. And hailstones were all over there, and it looked like piled up against everything. We talked to a foreman of the construction gang there and said the hail that night had beat the Ford, Chevrolet, and Plymouth. I don't know which one, but two of them had their roofs completely beaten through, and the other one held. But I don't remember which car it was, so I can't give you a plug to the automobile companies. But we get down into Yosemite and stayed around there as long as we could to want to come on out. We headed down. The ranger said if you take highway into Fresno, it's high mountains. The other one is you're going down a valley. And we headed toward Merced, that entrance there, and the old car conked out up there. We couldn't get it started again, so fellow stopped, and he pushed us all the way in the Merced. And then I can't remember what it was. It was a condenser or something out. And we had to get put in the next morning. We put it in ourselves. Come on down to Fresno. And I had an uncle where we were headed for Layton, which is outside of Hanford. And then we had to go in Layton to find where Uncle lived, and then we showed up over there to Uncle's place then there, and that's where we first stopped. We got to California.
What you said your brother had decided that he wanted to come to California. What did he think it was going to be like? Why this real desire for him to leave Missouri, go to California?
I have no idea. We never discussed it. He just wanted to come. There was no reason or anything like that. We didn't write and tell our uncle that we were coming. In fact, we only wrote one letter the night we hit that fog and clouds there in Denver. It just said, someplace west of Denver, I haven't got any idea where. And that's the only card we sent back to our parents. About never in 2 or 3 weeks, then we got my aunt got a letter, or an uncle, that two tenderfeet had headed towards California. We haven't heard from them. We wonder if they got there. So...
Had you heard in Missouri these glowing tales of how much money could be made in California or anything like that?
No, nothing whatsoever. We just had an uncle out here, a cousin. Uncle had a boy and a girl. The boy was a couple of years older than I am, and the girl was a year younger or so. And there was nothing that way. We decided we're going to come across the country, I guess.
Just an adventuresome spirit.
We had no fear of going any place or doing anything, for we had, you might say, lived on our own since we were 14. And it didn't bother us whatsoever.
So we got you now to your uncle's place in Hanford. What happened after that? What was the first kind of work that you...
Well, they had just picked their grapes. He had General California small farm there. And so he had his grapes on paper trays and wood trays. And rain had wrecked his paper trays, so we helped him turn those. So that was the first thing we had started in California, was in grapes. My cousin was over Watsonville at that time picking apples. So my aunt wrote and told him we're here. He wrote back and said, come on over, they're picking apples. We can work along there with bunches he was with. And so we stayed about a week, I guess, there at my aunt and uncle's until we got his little part of work that he had to do caught up so he wouldn't have to hire anybody. Then we headed over to Watsonville. Got there in the afternoon, and then we went on over to Santa Cruz. And that was the first time I'd ever been to an amusement park with any of those kind of gadgets like you have there on the boardwalk. But then Monday morning, we had went back over to Watsonville and cousin went to the foreman, told him that we were from Missouri, and they're staying with him, that we'd like to pick apples. He said, well, okay. Says, you've never did this kind of work, but you very likely won't make very much. We'll pay you by the box. And I forgot what he told us he would pay us, but we figured, oh, boy, that sounds pretty good. My brother and I hit ladders, and we made more the first day than anybody else in the picking field because we worked. And they sit and smoke or eat an apple or something like that. We're just pulling apples off into these bags. And we thought that was wonderful. I think we made $6-7 that first day. Oh, that was a whole week's wages in one day. Mm-hmm. And we picked till the apples were through. And then we went to pick tomatoes 2 or 3 days. And we came back to, everything was through over there. So we came back to Uncle's house. And it was, must have been November someplace in there then. There wasn't much to do that there until January, and he needed his orchard. He had apricots and grapes So he taught us how to prune trees, and particularly grapes. And then that's when we got our first job away from a ranch there at Hanford. There was a vineyard there at 160 acres called American Investment Corporation. And we didn't tell them that the foreman, we were from Missouri. We told them we were worked over on Hanford. That, and so he hired us to prune grapes. And his name was Joe Miller, and he was a real good fellow. He didn't have to look but to watch us for about one day. We didn't know too much about pruning grapes, but he was. Most of the pruners were Chinese, old crew that they'd bring out. And it really kept us going to keep up with them and prune them right, for if you don't prune a grapevine right, you cut the crop 50%. So you had to learn real fast of how to spot the ones that were fruit canes instead of suckers. So we worked there for, I think it was either 2 or 3 years in the summertime, or in the season, the pruning and tying and things to do in spring there, and then that's where I learned how to drive a Caterpillar tractor. Midsummer, when there wasn't anything to do, we went out on the west side and hauled barley and wheat to the out of the field. They were in sack. Back in Missouri, we'd used all bulk. It wasn't sack, so it was really a new experience to us. You had to learn how to load a truck from the ground, pile them 5 high on a truck and a 100-pound sack. You had to learn the technique of it.
Mm-hmm. In the middle of the summer in Hanford, I imagine that was not an easy job.
We were used to working in the out in the sun all day. It didn't bother us whatsoever. In fact, I had worked in higher heat than what's here in California for when we were in Missouri, hauling gravel off of a gravel barn in the summertime in the drought where there wasn't anything, no shade. We had a thermometer hanging under a little sycamore tree out on the gravel bar the day before the drought broke, and it hit 130 degrees out on that gravel bar that day, and we worked right through it. It was heat didn't bother us whatsoever. We were used to it, young, and strong, and healthy. It didn't bother at all. In fact, work habits have proven very successful to us. Later years of knowing how to work and get production or something accomplished.
Mm-hmm. So during those couple of years after you first arrived, your work really kept you pretty much right around the Hanford area. You didn't go out and follow crops elsewhere?
No, we did. We stayed right in that area for if we had run out between vineyards, something like that, there was a golf course right there. We would run up there and caddy. And then Hanford and my brother went to work in one of the dime stores in Christmas, putting up stuff like that. And I went to start working with Montgomery Ward Christmas season. And we always had work of some kind. We never ran out of money or had to ride home or anything like that, for we went on our own, we stayed on our own.
Did you stay with your uncle during that time?
No. Maybe 2 or 3, 4 months, something like that, all together between Watsonville and then coming back. And when this vineyard, big vineyard we worked on, they had a big bunkhouse there, and they gave us one room. We cleaned out a room, and Uncle gave us a bed. We had bought camp stoves mm-hmm. when we were in Watsonville, and we did our own cooking and everything right there in the bunkhouse. So we stayed there till then I went to Fresno. I worked Montgomery Ward, I think, two Christmas seasons, and then the second one I went on study at Ward's and stayed there.
What year would that have been?
The first time was 36, and 37 is when I started mm-hmm. full time.
When you, during this time, when you were working in the fields, working in the grapes, do you remember anything about attempts to organize the workers? Were you ever?
No, never approached for anything like that whatsoever. There wasn't that many. Well, I just don't believe there was any attempts whatsoever at organizing. It was way into the future where that started. For there just wasn't any union activities whatsoever.
It sounds like, as far as your experience goes, that you felt that you were treated pretty well by the growers. They gave you a place to live and
well, they offered us 25 cents an hour, and we had been working for 10. They were working 8 hours a day, and we told him. We'd been used to working 10. If he didn't care, we would work 10 for another 50 cents that day. We thought we were, as far as we were concerned, that was 2.5 times what we had been making back there. We were well satisfied with it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I'm just about ready to run out of tape again, so let me take a new tape.
Okay.
Interview with Mr. J.R. McClintock. Okay, we're talking about, we've just gotten to the place where you were starting to work at Montgomery Ward's, and I wanted to ask you, do you remember the book, The Grapes of Wrath, was written right around this time, and it showed the lives and the conditions under which the people that were working the fields lived, and it was not very pretty. Did you ever see any of those kinds of conditions?
No, learning what had happened later, we were very fortunate for this ranch where we went to work, American Vineyard Investment, had this big bunkhouse, and we had to clean it up and wash it and scrub it down, for it hadn't been used for quite some time. But they gave us room, and Joe Miller was a young couple. He hadn't been married too long, and they were German descent, and there was no way that you could have found anybody that was any better. In fact, years after I left, he would come in and didn't lose touch with each other for several years, and for he bought a ranch by the Dinuba, and when I was working in the Fresno store, he would come in, and so always kept in touch. But we saw none of this real hardship or living on a canal bank or something. I never even knew about anything like that until years later when you begin to read about it.
Did you ever hear about the government camps that went up, that the federal government built for the migrants to live in?
Not until way later, years later.
Uh-huh. So yes, it sounds like your experience was quite...
To me, we didn't know of anything different. And we had been used to what we called hard times and hard work, and knowing how to get something accomplished, or even reminisce a little more, when we haul, I mentioned hauling gravel to these roads, clay roads back there. There was 1 week we would load a three, there's four of us, would scoop this gravel by hand, pick it down, and load by hand, and there was for 5 days, 1 week, we loaded 25 tons of gravel per man a day. So we knew how to work. We went to work. We were paid by the yard. We were scooping. And we went to work before daylight and got home after dark. So we were used to it.
So as far as your experience, was that life doesn't sound like it was as hard in California as it was in Missouri?
Not near as hard. We were making 2.5 times as much wages, and we had worked most all the time, and there might be a month or two in a dead winter when rain and things like that, if we wouldn't have anything, but we had enough money to go to the dances and shows, whatever we wanted to. We saw what we call no hardship whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. About your uncle and his vineyard at that time, did he have any labor problems or any difficulties getting people to work for him that you remember him talking about during that period?
No, he only had, I believe, less than 100 acres, or right at 100 acres, so he could take care of it himself. Mm-hmm. He had a few cows that he milked, and he had apricots, and he had grapes, and he had a little grain, and he had a little cotton. So there was a farm area there. Generally, there was some neighborhood boy in the area that he could get when he needed help. Basically, the only help he needed, as I can remember, was when he dried his apricots, so he would have to have a crew when they were cutting the apricots, putting them on the trays and drying them. And those were, there's enough local boys and girls in the area that they were glad to get a little summer work, and that he had no problem of getting help that he wanted when he needed it.
You mentioned earlier, maybe be backtracking a little bit, when I asked you about some of Roosevelt's policies, the WPA, and you were kind of smiling when you said it. I wondered what you were thinking.
Well, when WPA, we had been graveling these roads, and when WPA came in, they said, and how they figured out who was to get on this, I don't remember. But anyway, one of the neighbor boys that had the truck, and they decided this would all be paid through WPA. So we used a number two scoop to scoop gravel. That's how we could load. We had to load, we're only allowed 5 minutes to load this truck of 3 yards. And when the WPA came in, they took the what we call a shovel, a number two shovel, not a scoop. And it would take them an hour to load this. Well, these men were the trucker, owner of the truck, had to make so many trips a day to pay for his truck. And he was using the scoop, and he figured that he was loading 7/8 of the load, getting nothing out of it. So he finally just quit and let them load the truck completely. And my parents never did go on the WPA, and so therefore I wasn't, I couldn't work on the truck like that. But on a holiday, they would take every holiday off and weekend. So this neighbor boy that owned the truck, he would come by and get us, and we would work on Saturday, Sunday, and then whatever day, Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year's. He would make as much in those 2 days as he'd make all week, because we would get in, and we were understood his circumstances, that he had to make enough to keep his parents. He was, the boys were supporting that family, which was seven or eight of them, something like that. Their mother and father had separated. So we would, we understood that you had to, he had to make enough, or he couldn't have the truck make his payments. So that's why WPA to me is a lot of, like a lot of the other government type jobs, that it's a waste of money. That to me is where a lot of the gimme started, right there. If people just simply don't know how to do a day's work and get something done. In fact, that's what they're saying now. A lot of the production of American worker has dropped, so that we're in some trouble right now.
This WPA experience would have been, what, about 1934, when you were, before you came to California?
Right. Mm-hmm. 34 was the year. And first part of 35.
So what did you think of Roosevelt and his whole policies to try to get the country out of depression?
Well, he tried. Some of his policies I don't care for now. I thought they were good then. The CCC, I thought, was one of the best things that I would have loved to got into that and came to the mountains of the West, Rockies or to the Sierra Nevadas, to work in that. But what the CCC was in our neighborhood was exactly what I was doing on the ranch, cutting out fence rows of brush and stuff like that. I was already doing that on the farm, so it didn't have any enticement to me to go somebody else's farm and where our own needed that work. But at that time, I approved of everything Roosevelt did, for I'd saw what, in other words, parents, they blamed Hoover for it, and of course I followed along in those areas there. But there was, even then, as young as I was, I could see some of it that I didn't like, for just examples of the work that was going on right there. They got nothing done. It just was too much the handouts. There was some of the free programs when I was in St. Louis, go back a little bit more, I really didn't hit me of how bad they were till I was door-to-door selling. And this one time I knocked on this door, and it right up to me right at noon. And they opened and asked me to come in. They had boxes, orange crates, a loaf of bread and some cheese. That's all they had in the house to eat. It really come through to me that having all we wanted to eat every day at upon the ranch, that there was some people that were really desperate. Mm-hmm. And programs that started did get these people going back to work, of type of work that it was.
So you didn't see this kind of desperation in your travels, or in the time that you were in California, that people...
We didn't get into any of these areas where it was so bad. I've heard about later. In the Hanford area there, to me, it was Good.
Mm-hmm. No ditch camps around Hanford or government camps or anything like that?
Not that I ever knew of.
Tent cities that you ever...
Not that we ever knew of.
So. Okay, I think that maybe for today we'll stop here, and if you... This is the second interview with Mr. J.R. McClintock, done on March the 5th, 1981, by Judith Gannon for the California State College Odyssey Project. Okay, we had gotten you as far as Hanford, and you had started to work for Montgomery Ward. At that point, you were, I think you said you worked one season for the Christmas time, and then you went to work full time.
I was started out just strictly part time to fill in the dead winter months. Then, in the next Christmas season, we'll call it, I decided I would rather work inside where it was warm and steady, but it took me a year or more to even, where there would be slack period, maybe layoff for a week or two, which was unsettled. And I finally went to work with Ward's full time and in the Fresno store. We worked there in and until the World War II, and I'd been there 5 years by that time. Then at that time I left Ward's, went to Lockheed to in the defense plants. I had tried to get in the Air Force, but there had been mix-up at the draft board, and never did go check out see what it was. So I went in the with Lockheed, and was with them to the end of the war. The
that would have been about 44, 43, something like that. You started at Lockheed.
Let's see, that wasn't it 41 when they hit Pearl Harbor?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I started in 40, if I believe it was 42, in the spring, where my brother was already in overseas, and let her tell him that this is going to be long and it's not going to be pretty. So I started with Lockheed. My brother-in-law was there. My brother-in-law was in the Air Force, and I went to work Lockheed, and I was sent to different plants and things like that, and I was actually away from home longer than what he was in the Air Force. He was in a training command, and I was, with the 2.5 years I was Lockheed, I was gone a full year. So I knew what something of the separation of the family and what the other boys were going through. I had was a little older and already married, had a daughter. So, and to mix up the draft board, I never did get into service. By the time it was straightened out, Lockheed wouldn't release me for the that time they were calling for planes as fast as we could put them out. We were putting out 4 B-17s a day and 21 P-38s. And so experience I had with the group that I was supervising, that I never did get in the service.
What kind of work were you doing with them?
We were assembling, building the planes from sub-assembly to all types of sub-assembly work, actually, building in outlying plants, send the parts to Burbank to be assembled into the final planes, completed planes. Worked on the B-17, the P-38, the PV-2. Some experiences in there, one of them, we never knew where we were going to be or how, when we would be called to go someplace else. One experience was just before D-Day in Europe. We had transferred the empennage of the 38 to Akron, Ohio, to be final assembled there in the empennage. And the planes that were sent back to Burbank, and then a whole train load was rejected by the Air Force. That they didn't know what they were going to do to them. And so we were on standby to maybe to fly into Akron and straighten them out. But the planes were already on the West Coast, the assemblies. So they brought it to Fresno, and we worked as long as we could stay awake. I have seen boys sitting there and go to sleep, and a drill go right through their hand. And we were working so long hours getting ready for they wanted. We didn't know at the time, but D-Day was approaching. Other time, they needed the patrol plane, PV-2, in the Pacific. They had trouble at the Burbank plant, and they told us to be ready to leave in a half hour. It was impossible to be ready to leave, but we had to be there the next morning for... they needed this equipment. That is about my experience in war. It's an indirectly experience.
So you were like in charge of assembling or supervising part of the assembly of the airplane?
We were called section supervisors. In other words, you had a crew working under you, and as the people become more experienced. This is why the plants were diversified, that they couldn't get, they had scraped the manpower barrel in the Los Angeles, San Diego area, and they had to go out into the San Joaquin Valley to get people that could build these. So, to the supervisory capacity was just like any other group, but you had to keep your assembly line production going. Later on, it was as we would consolidate the experience, I went into what we call salvage, any plane or parts that were damaged but still could be salvaged, and this would take more experienced people that were mechanically inclined to repair this plane to have it ready to go on to the assembly line.
Where did you meet your wife during this time?
I met my wife in Hanford. She is a native of this San Joaquin Valley. She was I don't remember what year it was, actually I met her at a dance one night. We were married in Hanford, and by the time that the war came, I had a daughter that was about a year old, and I was above the draft age that was set up originally. She had never been out of this valley, so it was quite an experience to take somebody out of the valley into the east that had grew up and didn't know the California had a desert on the other side of these range, that you couldn't believe that the Mojave Desert is still part of California.
Yeah. It's a big difference between the valley and the desert areas. If you think back, do you remember any during that time in Hanford and around there, your uncles or the local people showing any concerns or apprehension about all these people that were migrating to California during that time?
I don't remember any of that concern. For it, I guess now, looking back on it and reminiscing, that it wasn't a problem in that area. It was more of a new raw land out there, so there wasn't the crops and things. It was still in a grain, dry farming a lot of it, and it just hadn't been developed at that time like the Arvin or the close to the Sierra Nevadas range of the mountains, that land had already been developed because it was closer to the water supply. Out on the west side, that was all to be developed later as canals and things were brought into that area to have some water that they could have other than dry farming.
Mm-hmm. So when you married your wife, were you were still working for Montgomery Ward?
I had been working for Montgomery Ward a year or so by that time, and we went to Fresno then. And
the Lockheed plant was in Fresno also?
Lockheed plant that I was at was in Fresno. They had two plants there. I worked in both of them. And I was in three plants, I think it was, in Los Angeles during the time, one in Santa Barbara. Generally, we would be going after a new part. They would send the supervisors down to learn this new plant, part at that plant, and bring back a crew or then train them when we got back to the other plants.
Mm-hmm. So how long did you continue to work for Lockheed?
I was 2.5 years Lockheed, to the end of the war.
Then what happened?
Then I went back to Montgomery Ward in Fresno. It worked in the hardware department. Then I was made what we call the department manager of the paint department. Less than a year, then I was transferred to Madero. Was there, I believe, 9 months. Transferred to Porterville for 13 months, and was transferred to Visalia for about 9 months, and to San Jose, and then to Bakersfield, where I wound up. Spent the rest, in other words, till I retired from Ward's.
Mm-hmm. Did you move your family with you each time you got there?
Yes, this is, family was young. The kids, daughter had just started to school, and this is why we quit. We just couldn't be moving every 9 months. We thought it would be better to stabilize a resident at one place and where they could have their schooling and friends and things like it. It would be better for them in the long run. And the management end of it is up and down. Before the Korean War, it was kind of a recession, and things were on the rough side. You had to play too much politics.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What made you choose Bakersfield after having lived in all those different towns?
Well, it was where the opening, and I could get something that I could see a future in. That was for the expansion of the stores, and I knew Bakersfield, the rumors was it would be the second new store opened. I was here over a year before they started construction of the new store. Basically, that was what it was. That a large enough store that you had a that you built a future with it.
What made you decide to go back to Montgomery Ward's after having worked in Lockheed for those 2.5 years?
Well, I had got into the electrical end of it before the war, and I could have went with Standard Oil, but after the end of the war, for they offered several of us at the Lockheed plant to go with them, but we'd had to go on to Venezuela. There was, being young, it was just didn't feel to me to be separated from the family as long a period of time. And no other reason than we were guaranteed our jobs back at the end of the war if you were in the defense plant or in the military, and so just went back to it.
Mm-hmm. You had 3 children?
Two.
Two. Mm-hmm. And do they live here in Bakersfield?
No. My daughter is in San Bernardino. She is a LVN there. My son is in Stockton. He's a computer analysis with Diamond Sunsuite. Computers, I know nothing about it. He gets over my head just as soon as he starts talking. So they have both pretty good jobs. Mm-hmm. My daughter wants to go on and get her RN, but the inflation, things like that, is making it rough for her to keep her family going, because she's separated, and whether to go on or not, it's up to her.
It's a tough decision when you're a single parent and trying to make a living and trying to get an education and all of that. It's a hard way to go. So you and your wife are here in Bakersfield, and you came here about the time your kids started school and you settled?
We came here in 1950, and well, come think about it, it was 10 years before we got the new store for. We moved over there in the 60, and then I moved in a store of my own in 70, or a building of my own. I had the garden shop, and the only one in the country that was an individual building a store of its own. And then supposed to have retired in 80, but some things that was developing in the company, Mobil had took over Montgomery Ward, and they had dropped the retirement age where you could retire at 62 with full benefits, so I retired at 63 and before. And now there's been a lot more restrictions put on now than which I was ahead of it, which I figured out it turned out right.
So now you keep yourself occupied with your beautiful backyard and your garden? And
I work the census bureau more or less just to help out for the taking it every 10 years. They don't have an organization really which to build from, and thought my experience of handling people and things like that would be beneficial. But I worked in the field, which I got to travel. Well, I drove right about 10,000 miles in about 4 months, 5 months. And it was interesting out and seeing what's going on. on the byways, oil fields, and things like that. I enjoyed it very much.
And your wife, I think you said, is working for Calcutt?
She works for Calcutt. She is on her 25th year now. She is in the cotton export end of it, which is classified as a consultant of foreign and documentation. It's, right now it's China, which is the big customer of the, they're buying the most of the cotton now.
Well, it seems like we've kind of covered your...
We're down to about to date now.
All right. Is there anything that you have thought of while you're reminiscing, or any area that I haven't covered that you would like to mention that you can think about?
I can't think of anything. We have jumped back and forth in several places, but I think of nothing more comes to attention right now.
Okay. Thank you very much.